tick followed tock followed tick followed tock followed tick.
Guinness is good for you. Guinness is good for you. Guinness is good for you.
Think of Ireland's most iconic stout. The pint of the black stuff. The beer to beat them all. Hops, malt and barley.
Now think about how big a global operation Guinness is. Bet you didn't know there's an experimental brewery within its iconic St. James's Gate location along the Dublin Quays, cranking away for decades without the public even really knowing. A place of folklore and myth. Did it exist? How did one get in? What are they even brewing in there?
Stout, ale, lager, sour, lambic, pale ale, double, triple. Well, we wanted to know more, so we knocked on the gates ourselves.
So my name is Padraig Fox, and I'm the general manager of the Open Gate Brewery Bar Experience. I've worked for Guinness for over 14 years now, actually, between Ireland and the US for a couple of years in the quality team, in sales team in the States, and then came back to my dream job here behind the bar in the Open Gate.
So we're in the Open Gate Brewery, which we normally would frequent to of a Friday or Saturday evening, but instead it's a Tuesday morning, and it's a brewery now, not a bar, not a tap room. So this is a real life brewery.
Yeah, and I think that's something that not everybody understands when they come in, that this is actually a brewery. We are actually making beer here. It's not for show. It's not some kit that we borrowed from somewhere else and put a nice shiny purple light on it to show it off. It is a full working brewery. So we're kind of sitting in front of our fermentation and maturation tanks here at the minute, but the whole brewery takes up two or three stories of the building here. So it kind of starts off up on the top floor where we mill all our own malt. Vast majority of it is Irish grown and produced or put together for us by Minch Malt in Athy. We get it all in here. We mill it ourselves up on the third floor, which is quite a manual operation. And then it drops down to the next level, which is where we have our mashing, lautering, boiling stage, and then drops down to this floor here, which is all of our fermentation, maturation, and put into kegs and put straight onto the bar behind you.
How are you? My name's Ian Colgan. I've worked for Guinness for 11 years, and my title here is the Beer and Food Specialist, which is sounds like a made-up job, but it's a real one.
So this is it. So it literally like is a really posh homebrew system.
Wow, yeah.
So everything's done here. That's our mashing vessel that you mash in, your louter tun, and you come around here. So there's brews there. These are little small fermentation vessels. So they're tiny.
They are so small.
Yeah. So this will yield about 100 litres, a hectolitre. So it's not actually a huge amount. So yeah, so each of them will be full of different beers and have a list there of what's on. It's a gravity-fed brewery. So when the building was designed, you know when you come in, there's kind of the weird grate outside, like there's a massive door up really high. People ask us, what's it for? It was to get the machinery in. That's what it was built for. So it's gravity fed. So years ago, the most efficient way to brew was you mash your grain at the top and then it feeds down, filters, trickles down. So we still do that. So you can see the grain will go in there for this one and come down. So it's all done kind of top down to the fermentation vessels. These ones here now will be our fermentation tanks. So these will have their different beers in depending on what we're doing. And it can take anything from 9 days to a couple of weeks to make your beer, depending on what type of beer you're making. So yeah, they're always full, they're always flying through it. We aim to have a new beer on tap every 2 weeks. So it's a great system that we're running here. But like the building's old. The building was built in the 1970s. Now obviously the machinery is quite new because it has to be.
This experimental little brewery set within a bigger brewery finally threw open its doors to the public in 2015. Since then, it's been one of our favourite watering holes in Dublin, a truly modern temple of worship to all things beer, now welcoming visitors for a couple of nights every single week.
Guinness actually has always been all about experimentation and, you know, trying new recipes. So we didn't start off making a nitrogenated stout on day one. That only came about in 1959. But we've had a pilot plant, an experimental brewery on the site for over 100 years. So the old building is actually located right opposite the Guinness storehouse. And it's been located in the building here since 1963. So we've been trying new recipes, doing new stuff in here. And then we opened the bar to the public in November 2015. So we're just under 3 years open.
And the reception for it has been, from our eyes anyway in particular, has been excellent. It's a bar, it's a tap room with a difference. You know, we're not the
go out to a pub and sit and watch football type people, or we don't particularly enjoy very loud music. And here is Zen on a Friday night with great beers, great company. Is that point of difference something that you are so proud of?
Yeah, it is. And we want the beer and the staff to kind of shine here. So, you know, if you go, you get really loud music, we're not going to be able to talk over the music about the beer. And equally, when you go back to your table, everybody who comes in here gets a paddleboard of four beers whenever they come in. So between the two of you guys, you're going to get eight different beers. And we want you to be able to sit across from each other and talk about the flavors and the profiles in each eight of the beers. And then, by all means, talk about music, football, whatever else. But we want beer to be the lead-in conversation when you come here. And like behind the bar, we're all really passionate about beer. So I've been like big into craft beer, German beers, Belgian beers for years. So this is kind of my dream job. I get to talk about beer all day. Some of the guys are home brewers. Some of them are qualified brewers. Ian is a beer sommelier. So we've got different skill sets behind the bar. So if you've got a question, one of us will be able to answer it. But equally, we're so excited to just talk about beer when people are in here that that's what we want the main thing to be. And just for everybody to have a nice, comfortable night. So we cap the capacity to make sure you'll always get a seat, you'll always be able to sit, you'll always be able to enjoy your beers and just have a chat. And we want conversation and kind of laughter to be the overriding noise that you hear when you walk in.
How did you design the space, or did it just kind of happen organically?
It kind of happened organically a little bit. So where we're sitting now, this used to be a little bit of a warehouse area, so clean all that out, got rid of a lot of junk that we had here for a lot of years. The seating is actually quite industrial, so some of it is repurposed from other buildings. A little bit of industrial looking on the tables and chairs. The bar, when we first opened, we had eight different taps, of which four you could get elsewhere, and now we're up to 12 taps and a cask tap, of which nine are rotational. So we're getting a new beer on here, and that happened quite organically, where people came in and were given really good feedback on the beer. Like, we want to see this, could you make this? So we actively encourage people to give us feedback. So we'd never done a sour beer before, for example. Did a Damson Plum Sour about 2 years ago. So now we always try and have a sour beer on the bar because we know people really like sour beers and it's good. So that we're able to learn from people when they're in here as well. That, you know, there's times we think this will work, but equally we want as much feedback as possible from people when they're in here as to what they would like to see and what they would like to taste. And, you know, if anybody's got an idea for a beer, we will take it, and we'll sit with the brewers every week and go, this is what people really love this week. This is what people are really asking for this week. And equally, the brewers are coming back to us going, well, this is what we really want to do. Do you think people will like it when we put it in? So it works really well across all. So
are there any flavors that haven't ever worked? Is there anything that you've just thought, God, why did we even try that?
Just a load of faces in the middle of the Opengate Brewery on a Friday going, dear, this is not great.
There's been one or two that have definitely been divisive. Yeah. I won't say that they haven't really worked, but we did one, Patrick, our brewer, brewed one for St. Patrick's Day 2 years ago, which was a shamrock and potato ale, which used potato flour in the mash and shamrocks in the kettle. It was green, a little bit more pond green than luminous green, I would say. And divisive has probably been a little bit kind to it, that it wasn't one of our top performers, shall we say. And it was one of those ones where you go, right, we might not do this one again. But on the flip side of that, there's been ones where we kind of thought, well, don't really know about this one, and they've been received really, really well. So we did a double nitro coffee stout. Now, I like coffee, and I like coffee in my beer, and I thought, well, maybe this is a little bit of a niche flavor, but actually people really, really enjoyed it. That it was that creaminess kind of almost made it taste like a latte rather than that full-on coffee bean flavor in it. And we did one with a Brettanomyces, which it's becoming a bit more of a style now by using Brettanomyces in your beer. But traditionally, especially in a big brewery like ours, Brettanomyces was a big no-no. It's like, if you get Brettanomyces into your beer, it means your beer is infected. But actually, when you brew it intentionally with Brett in the beer, it gives a kind of a, it's kind of described as like a farmyard, barn kind of flavor and aroma from it. But people really, really got into that kind of flavor. And when it went on the bar, maybe it was my misconceptions. I thought, ooh, I don't know about this one. We could be sitting on 10 kegs here that are not going to go anywhere. And it was a bit of a love-hate beer, but I would say 50% of the people who tried it, and when we were giving out the thing, it's like, this is what it's supposed to taste like, so don't worry, this is the flavor that you are going to get. A lot of people thought it reminded them of a craft cola, almost, because you do get a little bit of sweetness, but that it's not a puckering sourness. It's a little bit more, like I said, farmyard, barnyard kind of a taste to it.
So then, on the flip side, what are some of your top performers, and what are some of the iconic brews that anyone who comes to the Open Gate is usually like, I want that one?
So there's one that we brew in November every year, and I'm giving you a heads up on this, that you need to come in at the start of November to taste this, which is sea salt and burnt sugar stout, and it genuinely tastes like a liquid creme brulee. So it uses real caramel in the beer. And as you guys know, caramel is very expensive. So it's the most expensive beer we've ever brewed. So there's only ever 12 kegs of it. It's also an example of one of the beers we actually can't scale up onto a bigger scale. So it uses real caramel, real vanilla beans in there. And vanilla, the price of vanilla has gone up shockingly as well. So if we were to brew this on a bigger scale in our big brew house, Brew House 4 down by the Liffey, it would actually cost about €19 per pint to sell that outside these walls. It's incredibly expensive to make, but when you taste it, you can see why. And if we were to brew it on a bigger scale, we'd actually have to take every single vanilla pod in Ireland and the UK just to make one batch of that beer. So that's why it's only available for 2 weeks every November. But that is one that we actually get people coming back looking for, kind of going, wow, I need to get it back. And last year when we had it on, a guy ordered a pint of it, and it was literally the last piece left in the keg. And you could almost see everybody in the room turn and look at him and go, okay, he's the one. Yeah.
You better enjoy that.
Well, that sounds incredible.
Yeah, strawberry porter a couple of years ago as well, which used 50 kilos of real strawberries in the brew as well. And that's one of the things that we really like about in here. It's like beers that we just can't scale up on a bigger scale, so they're only going to be here for a short period of time. That used 50 kilos of real strawberries plus fresh basil in there as well. So even the aroma was like a smell of a freshly picked punnet of strawberries. And I'm from Carlo on the Wexford border originally, so that is the smell of my childhood coming through, and every summer just reminded me of it. That's another one that flew out the door as well.
I remember quite a while ago we tried a little known one called Citra IPA, which I think the two of us just screamed about and loved, and you were giving us a heads up going, this is the next one. And now it's in shops across the country. Many bars around Ireland are starting to sell it as well, and it has been received so well. Was that always your goal, to kind of see, you know, this one will work, and if it works, let's scale it up and bring it along into the wider market?
So probably one in every 15 beers that we put on the bar, there is a kind of a little thing in the back of our heads going, this is one that potentially we might like to put outside the gates. And then the best thing about it here is that it's real-time feedback. So I worked in the States for Guinness for a couple of years, and we launched a couple of new beers when I was there. And I was working in Boston with an Irish accent, representing an Irish brewery. So whenever you'd go to do a blind taste test, they'd almost immediately suspect that this was coming from the Guinness brewery. And because they just wanted to like the beer and be nice about it, you didn't always get the feedback that you really wanted. Whereas here, Irish people tend to be quite cutting, especially when they know that all the beers are from the same brewery. They'll tell you which one they like, which one they don't like. With Citra IPA, it just flew out the bar. So people loved it in the tasting paddle. We got a lot of follow-up sales on pints, and we got great feedback from it. And that was one that we kind of went back to the brewers and went, this is flying. We're almost out of stock. Can we brew this again? So brewed it again, put it back on the bar, and the same story. So we try that a little bit. So sometimes if a beer goes really well, sometimes it can be the time of the year. So people tend to gravitate towards darker, stronger flavors in winter, a little bit more lighter, fruitier flavors in summer. So we tried the Citra IPA at two different times of the year in the test batches, didn't tweak the recipe just to see what the reaction was, and it was the very same again. So that was an example of one of the ones that people really wanted us to make more of, see outside the gates, and equally one where we kind of spotted a little gap in the market for an approachable IPA with a little bit of a fruity kind of flavor without going too far down the bitterness route as well.
This is probably one of the premier places that the beer that you drink from that tap is so fresh. It was produced across the other side of the room. So how quickly do you go through a keg?
It probably depends on the beer. So even in spite of all the great flavors and things that we've got on the bar, pints of Guinness are still our biggest seller. So about 40% of all the pints that we sell are pints of Guinness. So people really like experimenting in the flight, and then some people may take a second flight, and you know, they'll always buy a pint of their favorite, but for the most part, people just tend to gravitate back towards what they know. But say, for example, the first time we had Citra IPA on the bar, the follow-up rate of sales on that was fantastic. Same with the sea salt and burnt sugar stout. We'd probably go through two or three kegs of that a night, and it's gone within 2 weeks. Things like the Shamrock and Potato Ale, a little bit slower. But again, whenever beer goes on the board, we've usually got about, I'd say, 12 to 16 kegs of that beer, and we'll get about 5 to 6 weeks out of that stock. So every time you come in, if you leave it 2 weeks between your visit, we're probably going to have another new beer on the bar. So even if you leave it 4 weeks between your visit, when you come back in, there's probably three or four new beers on the bar that you didn't get to taste the last time you were in.
There's always been that comment, I'm sure you've heard it many times, that was like, oh, they call themselves craft, but they're not. Now, you don't call yourself a craft brewery. You call yourself an experimental brewery. Is that kind of a battle that is kind of always going on a little bit, just to differentiate yourself?
Yeah, I mean, we're very open that we're not a craft brewery, and even on the beers that we've launched out of the Open Gate Brewery, the St. James's Gate Harp is still very much part of that logo, that you know these beers are coming from the brewers at Grinnis. To be fair, our baby brewery here is a 10 hectolitre brewery, which is bigger than the vast majority of Irish craft breweries, so we're 100% we're not craft. We've got a we've got a big brewery behind us, which brings lots of skill sets and lots of learnings and skills and abilities, from lab work to yeast analysis to even the barley before it even comes in. Our main Guinness brewers go out at the start of the growing season to the farmers, so we've got a lot of, maybe not help, but a lot of like knowledge that we can call on here. So as you, something starting up in the background there. So like we're very clear that we're not a craft brewery. We are a wing of a bigger brewery, that this is our experimental wing. And yep, beers do make it out of here, but they are brewed in Brewhouse 4 down by the river. Anything that's brewed in the experimental brewery stays on the bar here. But yeah, so we're yeah, it's sometimes people will ask, like, oh, is this your answer to the craft beer movement? The brewery's been here since the 60s. It just so happens that the bar opened 3 years ago. And in fairness, if we were to try this 10, 15 years ago, I'm not sure the market would have been right for it. So sometimes we've done innovations that were maybe ahead of their time. So I think Irish people travel a lot more now, get to taste other flavors. I mean, Thai restaurants probably weren't a thing 20 years ago. Now there's quite a few of them in Dublin. So I think people's taste buds change and evolve over time. So probably wouldn't have been right for us to do this 7, 8 years ago, whereas now the time probably is right. And it's just, we're all about beer, really. That's what the main thing is.
Going back to the times when this wasn't open to the public, tell us really what was it like? Was it this place that you all went to on a Friday night and after work and didn't tell anyone? And
actually, it was kind of this place that everybody knew existed but didn't really know where it was. Okay. So the brewers who kind of worked in here, it was almost like a little secret club. But if you asked 90% of the people who worked in St. James's Gate where it was, they probably wouldn't be able to direct you to it. So it was very much a working brewery. Even the door that you walk in now, that brought you straight into the warehouse. So if you poked your head in, you just see boxes of stuff around and maybe a little bit of brewing equipment in the background. So yeah, it was like this little hidden secret on site for so many years. We all knew it was here, but just didn't really know where it was or how to get in or who to talk to get in. So by putting a bar in here, it brings people in, funny enough.
Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. If you're a patron of the Art of Beer Brewing, we'd love you to consider joining us as a sponsor of this podcast via our Patreon page.
Yes, for some loose change, you can help support us with those small operational costs in producing this 100% free podcast, and get a few little exclusive benefits along the way, like early releases of each episode and personalized postcards. Join us at Patreon. That's patreon.com/gastrogaze.
Now back to propping up the bar at the Open Gate Brewery.
2.5 years open now. Is there anything that you wish you knew at the start, or is there anything that has come to light during those almost 3 years that you think, if only I knew that sooner?
We've learned a lot in the 2.5 years, and because people are giving us feedback on the beers, they tend to even be more expansive and give us feedback on the experience and what they'd like to see. So for example, when we first opened, we didn't do food at all. It was all about the beer, and people come in and they want a couple of beers. Obviously you're going to want food. So we've learned from that we've tweaked our food menu quite a bit over the last 2.5 years. So when we first started, we had kind of sausage rolls that were available behind the bar, just something, a little bit snack to keep you going. But as we've moved on, and as trying to match beer with food has become a bigger thing for us, we've now got a summer menu in place that will be replaced by an autumn menu coming into September, October, and really try and match the flavors of the season with the flavors on the bar. So having just done sausage rolls, now we've got flavored popcorn from our friend Ruth in Cornude, who's just around the corner. So she gives us different flavors that pair with the beers on the bar. So if you just want something small and snacky, we've got different flavors that will match perfectly with your pint in front of you, right up to our kind of hot food menu now, where we do IPA infused chicken wings, gourmet hot dogs from Lachlan's sausages, pulled beef brisket. So flavors that are there to match with the food more, a little bit more substantial, and just kind of keeps you here for a little bit longer, because now we're not just talking about beer, we're talking about food and beer together as well.
At the moment, there's a massive kind of, I suppose, change around with beer. It's not just about where it was years ago, where people go to the pub for pints. There's a lot of food involved now in people's, in the drinking culture. And I think that's a huge part. And Guinness are really kind of passionate about the fact that beer and food are a big thing now. For the longest time, people do it naturally, but no one's actually taken an official stance on it. So my role here pretty much predominantly is working with the different markets on kind of menu design and working with chefs and kind of introducing to our beers and our flavors and how they can both kind of complement complement one another. And then on a daily basis here in the storehouse, I'd be working with Peter and the team on kind of changing trends in food, so it gives them a better idea of what beers to maybe start making. So we're slightly different from others is that we do food led, so it's food first. So what we do is we look at what restaurants are doing, and then we retrofit our beers to fit them, rather than go in and say, look, we have this amazing beer, this is what you should cook. You don't do that to chefs, you know. So we kind of let them lead the way and then we follow suit. A lot of people are doing it. I think we just have a bit more, I suppose, focus on it. We're putting a huge focus on it. And again, it also links into the responsible service of alcohol as well. It's beer with food, which is very important in today's society as well. And what I've noticed, and it's quite a natural fit, because obviously wine is hands down the pairing of choice for most foods, has been for years. But what's happening now with food cultures, and you'll notice yourselves, when you're out and about, people aren't, it's not single serves anymore. It's all about sharing plates and platters. And beer is the ultimate sharing drink. You know, it's about people coming together. So it's a perfect opportunity for beer to sit into that market. And the other thing I've noticed as well is if you are out for wine, you bite into that wine. So if you're at a table and someone picks your wine, that's what you're drinking for the evening. Where beer is, you can have a beer, I can have a different beer. We're all eating the same food and we're all getting a different experience. So it's a much more, I suppose, experimental approach to food and beer nowadays. And
far more personal as well.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And we get people into the open gate all the time and someone comes in and says, oh, I don't drink beer. And my answer is, you just haven't found a beer you like yet. There's so many choices out there now. And like people just think, I suppose, again, it's the old mentality. People think of beer as, you know, fizzy, frothy, like your kind of standard lagers. But like the sour beers, there's coffee stouts, there's so much styles. Personally, at the moment, there's a huge trend in milkshake IPAs, which are amazing. So they're IPAs that use lactose and fruit juice. So you're getting this almost like milkshake experience. Oh, wow. Yeah. We may or may not have one in the pipeline for the open gate. We're something that we're talking about. So we're looking at doing maybe. Yeah, they're massive. So you can get them around Ireland now. And New England IPAs, which are those real cloudy, misty ones. And it's changing people's perceptions of beers. Whereas people who love fruit juices and things, there's beers out there for you. You know, there really is. It's an ever-changing landscape. But it's very experimental. And it's very exciting.
Food and beer, that seems like the absolute dream job.
Yeah, I kind of, my mom's very proud. I kind of pinch myself quite regularly about it, yeah. So, it's an interesting role. So I work for Guinness, I started off as a tour guide in the storehouse. I wouldn't say I'm the most learned of persons, but I'm very inquisitive and I ask quite a lot of questions and I noticed that. And the one thing that's amazing about Guinness as a company is they're great for furthering your education. So any type of beer kind of knowledge or course that came up, I jumped on it. So February last year, I built up enough of a portfolio that I approached the Beer and Cider Academy in the UK, which facilitate the Beer Sommelier course, but you have to be asked to sit it. So they allowed me, and in February then I passed. So I'm one of 12 Beer Sommeliers in Ireland. I think there's 120 in the world across 7 countries. So yeah, I have a little cert, a little gold medal now. I think everyone thinks they're beer specialists, but I have a medal to prove mine now. It's the only difference, yeah.
So all that, I'm better than you. It's like, no, I'm officially better than you are.
I have the gold.
Exactly. Yeah.
Personally, what's your favourite style of beer?
I'm a sour man. So I came across it during my beer studies. I went to Colorado off my own back. I actually went for a wedding. And I went to the New Belgium Brewery. And it was my first introduction to a sour. And what they did was they did the regular tour. And the brewer gave you a beer. And it was a lovely beer. Then in the same sentence, he gave you the same beer that was soured. And I was like, what is this? Where has this been all my life? That was a good few years ago. So I spent that whole time in Colorado looking out for sours. It's a good space, though, because it's one of like the craft beer capital of the States. So I had lots of choice. And when I came home, I was like, guys, you need to try sour beers. Traditionally in brewing, that would be seen as an off or like an off flavor in a beer. So getting people's heads around the fact that like it's not a gone off beer, and it just changes. It doesn't taste like beer anymore. That's the most amazing thing about it. It's exciting, and again, holding up with fruits and fruit juices, and it's just a completely different experience than your standard fizzy, frothy, foamy beer. Like, it's really, really cool.
So how do you pair food to a sour then?
It depends on the food. So we'll look at the food first. So brewers and chefs are very alike. You know, they take 4 ingredients like the brewers do and they make their beer. Chefs take these really humble ingredients. So they're very alike. There's a lot they have in common. So actually collaborate with them is very simple. So for instance, for the sour, umami is a massive flavor. We all crave it. You know, it's Chinese food, that lovely kind of, that savory taste. So sour beers are great for cutting through that. So if you're having something that's
very heavy or rich in umami, it might get a bit grating on your palate. So you need something to kind of cut and lift it. So what sour beers do is that natural acidic and that sour actually breaks it down and actually invites you back to go again. So it's great. That's where we put sours in for that. But also, if you find like a creek, which is like a cherry sour, lambic style sour, they're great for things like red meats. It's almost like an alternative to red wine. It has that kind of, you know, that kind of that berry taste and that bitterness. So it's great for as an alternative to red wine for red meats and things. It works really, really well together.
When we were in Brussels a few years ago, they have an iconic dish, which is creek with rabbit. It's a like stew, which has rabbit, carrots, and a like creek creamy sauce. And it's just the most amazing flavour.
Yeah, and again, if you think of it, that beer, that Cherry Creek, would be perfect for cutting through that. Yeah. You know, it enhances all the flavours. So, yeah. But again, the thing about beer and food, and I think taste in general, is everybody's palate's different. So it's not that it's a grey area. It's a very kind of, you know, everyone has their own opinion on it. But what we try to do is kind of make it as legitimate as possible. And so when someone tries it, they can say, okay, I get that. If you're ever showing anyone from like a very simple beer and food perspective, desserts are never seen as a dish to go with beer. And how we talk about it is draft Guinness, which is the iconic Guinness. And you know, for years and years, beef and Guinness stew, porter cake, seem to go kind of, or Guinness and oysters, quite savoury based. If you get a drop of draft Guinness and have some chocolate with it, it is the ultimate pairing. And it really will change people's mindsets on beers and food. The reason being, it's a real simple science. Roasted barley is used in the making of Guinness. It gives it the dark flavour. We roast the barley similar to the way you'd roast a coffee bean or cocoa bean. So they're the same. And when you put them together, it's just an ultimate pairing. And then that creamy smooth texture from the gas with the melting of the chocolate, it's just a match made in heaven.
I think everyone will agree that chocolate Guinness cake is one of the best things ever, because it's that intense, dark, chocolatey, nutty flavour that is just so comforting, and it just works in perfect pairing together.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying again. And people forget like porter cake, which is like our Christmas pudding. The secret ingredient in porter cake is porter or Guinness or stout. So they have been used there for years. And I suppose one of the amazing things about me that I have access to is that the fact that Guinness has such a massive archive. So our archive is over, there's only 250 years worth of history in there. And what's amazing for us is when we go back, 1837 is the first official Guinness pairing. So it goes back to then. And the first Guinness pairing was Guinness and oysters. So it's seen today as this kind of, you know, it's a match made in heaven, but there is a history behind it. And it's actually a really interesting story. A gentleman called Benjamin Disraeli, he went on to be Prime Minister of England. He was writing letters home to his family on how he was getting on in the House of Parliament. And he's in a gentleman's club in Drury Lane in London. And he wrote, and it's kind of funny now, but the last lines was, "I now ended the greatest day of my life, and now I'm supping on Guinness and eating oysters." And since then, it's a match made in heaven. But what's really interesting is if you go to the pubs and bars around Ireland and get your Guinness and oysters, they give you a pint of Guinness with the oysters. The actual beer in 1837, there was no pints of Guinness. It's the old bottle, it's the extra stout or Guinness original. And actually, when you put those two together, it's an amazing pairing, because extra stout is kind of sweet, it's sour, it's savoury, but it's missing one flavour to give you a full palate. And it's salt, and so oysters so briny, so the two of them together just create this amazing match. So a nice little trick, if you want to do Guinness and oysters, do it with the bottle of Guinness, the extra stout. It's a completely different experience.
But with which oysters are best for Guinness?
I don't know. On my personal preference, I like Carlingford oysters. They're the ones, my personal preference. But yeah, it depends. Oysters are great anyway, really, aren't they? Yeah. And even if you look into more modern times, like the 30s, 40s and 50s, we found archives of these amazing posters that Guinness did around all different types of cheese and what cheese goes with Guinness and different types of meat that go with Guinness, fish that goes with Guinness. So even back then, they were actually doing what we're doing now, yeah. Which is amazing. And it's a great reference point. So we would work quite closely with Justin O'Connor, the executive chef in the Storehouse as well. And that's where all our kind of our inspiration comes from. The reason the restaurant is called 1837 in the Storehouse, it's named after the document from 1837. So there's a lot of history there.
Cheese pairings and Guinness. I like the sound of this.
I personal preference for like dark, strong, like if you like a coffee stout or things like Guinness draft, made with blue cheese. It really works well with blue cheese. It just kind of complements the two of them. For your more hard cheddars, something with a little bit of bite or effervescence. So the extra stout is great for like real strong mature cheddars and things like that. And then beers like Hop House and things like that will go very well with the kind of smoother, like your Edams and things like that. Because there's a lovely fruity tone to Hop House from the hops that we use. So those kind of citrus tropical notes works really well with kind of lighter cheese like Edam. So there's a full spectrum there again for cheese and beers as well.
For a complete novice who doesn't quite understand, you know, the best ways to pair food and beers, what would be any tips that you'd give them?
really simple approach. So the one that I use, and it's kind of used quite across the board, is it's called the three C's. So does the beer cut, does it contrast, or does it complement? So a really simple one to do is look at your food, look what you're cooking, and then look at the beer and look what ingredients would be similar. So for instance, if you have lemongrass or citrus, Hop House has citrus tones. So there you go, that's a very easily complement. Same if you're cooking on the grill, they have that rich smoky tones. That's going to go really well with your stouts because, again, that roasted smoky tones. And then things that are sweet. So if you're thinking of things like pork, like, you know, with like honey glazes and things, ales have that lovely malty sweet tone, so they'll go along with that. So it's quite a simple thing to do that way for complementing. It's literally just looking at the ingredients and balancing up. Bit more complex would be your contrast. So the contrast is like, you know, the way balsamic vinegar goes with strawberries, it shouldn't, but it does. So you can find these amazing contrasting flavors. So you think you're going, like, that's never going to work. So for instance, most people when they do seafood will go for lagers and light beers or wheat beers. My approach is completely off target. I go for really heavy stouts, and people are like, what are you doing? You know, but if you try like a scallop with a really heavy stout, what actually happens is they contrast so much that all of a sudden this amazing sweetness from the scallop just appears out of nowhere, and it's just completely showcased. So things like that where you can experiment with it. And then cut is very simple, like does the cut through the flavor. So CO2 is heavily involved in beers, they're fizzy, they're great for cutting through rich fats. So like there's a reason why pizza goes well with lagers. You know, it's been going around, everyone drinks a bottle of beer with their pizza, because it's quite a rich flavor. So you want something that's going to lift your palate. So really fizzy, effervescent beers are great for cutting through rich flavors. So it's quite a simple science, but you can get really heavily involved in it. But the best thing about it is, as the taste is so different, just experiment. Try it. Taste your food, taste your beer. It's very simple. You can do it that way, and we'll be these amazing parents. But you know, sometimes you're going to get something that completely just grates. Coriander is very hard to get right, because coriander is a room splitter anyway at the best of times. So coriander is very hard, I find, to like, it'll cut through a lot of beers. So if the beers get lost with coriander. But then if you go down your kind of your wheat beer roots or anything that has kind of maybe an aniseed tint, that's how you get it. But like I remember for the longest time trying to get coriander to the beers, and the beers were just getting lost. So wheat beers, enter with a phenolic or banana tone. That's how you tackle coriander in your dishes. Yeah.
How long has it taken you to train your palate?
Do you know, it's one of those things, I don't actually know where I got it from. My background is, I actually studied music. That's what I did in college. So you probably know the old saying, once a musician, always a bar person, because you can't get any work. So I spent most of my time working in bars, and my family have a whole history of working in bars. All my cousins and family still work in bars. So I kind of always had that trade. But I was always interested in cooking. I was always, my mom was a great cook, and she's still around, sorry, she's not gone. My mom is a great cook, sorry. So she showed me a lot of tricks when I was younger. Like I was introduced to garlic at like 10. Do you know when, at the time in Ireland, like I'm nearly 40 now, that was exotic. Yeah. You know, spaghetti bolognese was the most exotic thing you'd get at home. So I was introduced to food from a really early age. And I think when I started working for Guinness, it just was a natural progression. I was like, why isn't anyone doing this? This food goes really well with this, why isn't anyone doing this? And I said the team here were great at kind of pushing me in that direction, and I became a beer specialist. I trained as a brewer, I got my brewing exam here, I passed all my beer exams, and the next stage for me was really like, I need to be a bit more authentic. And it was grand, you've been at the dinners and appeared, but I'd no gravitas, I'd nothing to prove it. So having the sommelier has just given me that little bit more of a push that people actually listen to me now. Otherwise they're going, your man's just talking about beer and food. But I said I bring out my shiny medal and blind them now. Yeah. That's how I do it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you do. We have seen it many a time where you just start shining it, going, this is me.
Yeah, yeah. No, I brought it out for the first time. People go, what is that? I'm like, yeah, I know. It's kind of cool. I don't bring it out that often. I have it kept in a nice little case at home. But just for big events and stuff, I'd bring it out. Again, it's just, I get to travel quite a bit with Guinness as well. So recently I was in Russia doing a launch for some of our products over there. And again, when you're up on stage talking to these people, they're like, who are you? Why are you here? What's your experience? And you're talking to brewers and you're talking to journalists and stuff. So it's handy to have something like that. Well, actually, I am trained. I have got my, I suppose, my certs, which is like anything. It's nice to have some type of certificate in something, you know?
As you said, you travelled across the world and you've trained across the world as well. How does the beer culture in Ireland compare to the beer cultures elsewhere?
I think we're still relatively quite in our infancy here. Although it's flying, and like it's amazing to see like the amount of new breweries popping up, and there's some amazing beer out there. And I think for the longest time, although we're famous for making Guinness and we're famous for having other beers like that, we had very little choice. It was the lager ale stout. That was pretty much it across the board. So actually, us turning around into this kind of new craft beer style, it was actually took us a longer time than I thought people expected. The US is probably a good 5-6 years ahead of us. I was in Russia recently, and big shock for Russia is they're all over it. They're, again, like America, there's tap houses everywhere. There's like, I think in St. Petersburg alone, there's like 50 breweries. And the beer's amazing. Like, they're making these amazing, amazing beers. And that was a big shock for me. Like, some of the event spaces I was in are literally like the big tap house you see in the US. 50 beers on tap, 300 bottles. So Russia, it's amazing. But I think us, we're slightly behind. But it's amazing to see there's a lot of breweries that are kind of really setting the standard here in Ireland. And it's amazing to go into your old local now, and years ago you had 3 taps and it was 10. And even, I think for the longest time here, to get craft beer, you had to go to a craft beer pub. It was almost like it was a separate entity. But nowadays, it's mainstream. Like, you go into your local and there's a great ale on tap or a great IPA on tap, which I never thought you'd see. So although we're in our infancy, I reckon it's not going anywhere. It's here for a while. Like, I was recently down in Wexford, and Yellow Belly is on tap down there. And there was a bar. I was like, that's amazing. Like, this is made down the road. The guy's here. And everyone's really excited about it. They get really behind it, which is amazing. Yeah, and there's some great breweries out there. There really is. And again, those styles like Sours and like Rascals are doing the Milkshake IPA. It's amazing. If it's out there, you should try that one. There's loads of great choice out there for beers. And again, there's a beer for everybody now, which is really, really cool.
If you could do your ultimate dinner party featuring food and beers, what would it be?
Oh, let me think. I don't know. Geez, that's a really tough question. I've tried so many. What I'd like to do is I'd like to see beers on like a really high-end menu, like so in a restaurant. So like, you know, like where you know, something like foie gras or something like really like expensive veal or venison, and your beers are with there. That's my goal is that I go into a high-end restaurant in town, and instead of a wine list, they give me a beer list, and they have them all paired up with them, and that would be my goal. So you can do it with anything, but I'd love to see a high-end, like a really, really high-end restaurant, like just getting involved and saying, look, here's some beers we pair with these amazing expensive dishes. That's what I'd kind of like to see.
Something amazing is happening inside the walls of this iconic brewery, and there's lots of exciting stuff happening within lots of other breweries and distilleries across Ireland, elevating that visitor experience an extra notch.
Before we finish by asking about where to find the best pint in Dublin City, talk turns to the law. The legislation is changing in Ireland now with the Craft Drinks Bill, which should help transform the tourism offer for drinks producers in Ireland and bolster the beer tourism industry massively. We wondered, are others looking toward the Open Gate, Guinness and Diageo to plan their own enhanced offering?
Yeah, we've had a couple, and actually we do guest taps here as well. So that's another learning that from when we first opened, that a lot of our customers maybe aren't craft beer drinkers and just want to try different beers from Guinness. So when they're in, we get to talk about not just our beers, but the Irish beer scene. So we've had guys like Boyne Brewhouse, Kelly's Mountain Brewing, Five Lamps, Dead Centre and Athlone, all pouring on the taps here as well. So it's an opportunity for other breweries to tell their story and get their beers into the hands of people who maybe might walk past that aisle in the supermarket, or maybe skip over it if they saw it in a pub. And for us, it's great because we get to meet other brewers and just talk about beer and what they're finding out there in the market as well at the minute. So that's been cool. Also, with the taproom legislation changes, I think is a hugely positive thing for the overall beer industry, especially when I worked in the States. Like, every taproom, you can go in, you can do a tour, you can try their beer, take a six pack to go home. So I think when that bill comes to pass, it's going to be fantastic for the overall Irish beer scene, not just from selling beer at the point of the tour, but equally tourists are going to come. You're going to see more beer tourism and just be able to open your doors to bring people in from across the globe to taste local and fresh and showcase your wares is hugely positive. I really think a rising tide floats all boats, that the more people who drink beer and try different flavors is good for the overall industry. So somebody who may have never had an IPA might come in here and have their first interaction with an IPA, then go back to their hometown and go, actually, my local brewery makes an IPA, now I'll try it. And equally, somebody who's a big fan of the local brewery can come in here and compare ours to theirs, or you know, feed in the, like, I actually really like this beer from my hometown brewery, have you guys ever made this kind of style before? And it can only be good for the overall industry, I think.
And one more kind of ultimate question. So aside from the Guinness storehouse, aside from the Open Gate Brewery, everybody wants to know, whether they're a local in Ireland or a tourist, where is the best place or the best places for a Guinness in Dublin?
Oh, I don't know if I can say that. You know, it's up for debate, and it actually links back to taste, like we were talking earlier. Taste is a very personal thing, but you're also a victim of your environment. So we get a lot of people from the US come to Ireland and say, why does the Guinness taste better in Ireland than America? And it's also to do with the environment you're in. So I always use this example. You know, when you're in a rush and you're going to a house party, and you stop off in the garage because that's all you can do, and you get like a cheap bottle of Planck wine, and you go out to the house party, meet all your friends. That wine is the best wine you've tasted at that dinner, do you know, at that event. Take the same bottle of wine and sit in the hotel room on your own with the rain coming out the window. That wine's not going to be so good. So, you know, they're in Ireland. They're surrounded by Irish people, probably in Dublin, probably in Temple Bar with live Irish music, and have a pint of Guinness in their hand. That's going to be a good pint of Guinness. So I think it's a lot to do with the atmosphere and the environment. So I think that's a huge part that people don't even look into. And even with taste, you probably know yourself when you're tasting food. It was like if you're Spanish tapas in Spain, it's better than your tapas you're making in your back garden. You know, it's just a different experience.
Well, we used to always say the best pint is in Dublin Airport, only because it was the last thing we ever had in Ireland before getting on a plane.
Yeah,
so
that's it, yeah. That's also a huge part of it as well. Like, it's, yeah. I'm from Dalkey myself, so, like, my local pub for me is my best pint of Guinness because I'm there with my friends, I'm off work, you know, and that's it. But there's some great spots around town. And again, with the craft beer movement, quality is getting better across the board. So not just for Guinness, the quality in the bars is so much better than it ever has been because people are taking time to clean their lines. You know, they're taking time to make sure the beer is fresh on tap. So it's a much, with the onus on beer being so popular now, it's actually going to up the quality of the beers as well, which is very important.
And I suppose it's important for the survival of the local pub in many cases as well. If they don't keep up with the times for one, but also keep up with the expected quality and standards, it's
true as well, quality standards, but also it links back into food. A lot of bars serving food now because people aren't going just for pints anymore. Like years ago, you know, you go out on a Friday night and you might meet your friend for a pint or two. Now you're meeting your friend for a bite of food and beer. Do you know, and the beer is coming with the food. So everywhere, every pub, all locals now have extensive bar menus. We're like, gone are the day that you know, you might get a packet of rancheros or you know what I mean? Or a packet of scampi flavoured fries. That was your pairing of choice. Oh, yeah. If you want to know, by the way, Citra IPA goes very well with scampi flavoured fries. Just put it out there.
Consider us told now.
So, yeah. This is a good one. I actually did a pairing for the crisp festival for PE Heart. So that was an interesting one where they gave me loads of like old school retro crisps to like pair. And I was talking to someone in Guinness and I was like, I'm doing this amazing festival in Metopia. And then the same thing, they're going, I'm doing a beer pairing for crisps, you know? So it's a very unique job I have. But but the food offerings are so now amazing in pubs. And again, what I really like about it is they're using local foods, yeah. Locally sourced ingredients. And it's so important. And I think you'll probably know yourselves because you used to do it so often. Ireland's becoming a destination for foodies, which is amazing. It's so important because we are Ireland, we fresh seafood, we grow amazing vegetables, amazing produce, and it needs to be promoted more, 100%. And I think it's great to see.
Guinness is good for you.